is a door more than a door? And what is a door anyway? Is it simply a physical thing that marks an entryway or exit? Is there something interesting in exploring the significance of an entryway? Certainly each door has a different story to tell. The one with a second bolt lock speaks of a frightening experience that the house dweller had as a young child when an intruder came into the family's house at night. The door with the chipped paint at the base tells of the night that the newlyweds had their first fight, and one of them stormed out, remorseful and scared, kicking the door in sadness and frustration until the door finally reopened. They speak of all of us. The doors of our dwellings are like the blades of grass in a Whitman poem, each unique, but together singing a unified song. And that might be an image we should hold on to, each unique, but together singing a unified song. And what of the garage door? It is the garage door which speaks not just to our personal narratives, but which sometimes tells us more. In stopping to see garage doors, we find ourselves before a unique entryway into our culture, who we are as a people, and how we choose to live our lives. Choose? Yes, choose. A front door or back door is a necessity. Our dwelling places have always had some means of defining an entryway, even if it is as simple as a tent flap. But we choose to put a door on our garages for all sorts of reasons, and those reasons, and the doors we choose, are not, we might say, uninteresting. Words of Ramona Lee Visconti in her study, The Art and History of the Garage Door. In recent years, they have invited us through the kitchen door. Another time, we all passed through the bathroom door, and the door may even have creaked a bit as we followed them all up into the attic. Well, this year, they won't be opening a curtain, but rather, perhaps both literally and figuratively, the garage door will rise to reveal the lives and lots of the things these folks have left behind in that capacious space designed for coming and going. It's the annual playroom series produced by Gaslight Theatre. Each season, they choose a specific room in and around the house, and they ask playwrights with ties to the region to create new one-act plays set in said space. There's an extra layer this year as Gaslight Theatre settles into a new performance space, a new playroom, if you will, in Wilkes-Barre's East End. Matt Hinton is a writer, actor, and director. He is Gaslight's artistic director and the one who conceived the idea for Playroom. He stopped in at the WVIA studios with Gaslight's Brandy George, who will direct one of the pieces in the garage edition of Playroom, and with David Parmalee of Little Theatre of Wilkes-Barre, who will be working with Gaslight for the first time, directing two of the one acts. We began our conversation with Gaslight's new space, Matt Hinton.
Our space is at 200 East End Center, and we were really fortunate to have the connection with Amato Properties. So it's in the same plaza as our friends at Kiss Theater, and they were very friendly about setting up what our needs were, finding us a very large space, 3,500 square feet. So we have a lot of room to work with. We can put a play against one wall, against another. We were auditioning in one area and spinning things around and thinking about how we could use the space in a lot of different ways. And I've had a few conversations already with David Reynolds about how we might do Playroom. And it's pretty exciting. That's a cool space.
What are the trade-offs?
Well, I mean, when you're a nomadic theater company like we started out and we've been for the last 13 years, we haven't had a home. You find that you're very quick to adapt to a lot of different places' needs and its sort of restrictions. And I always think that you're more creative when you're restricted. So there's something to that. But now that we are restricted, maybe even monetarily, you know, there's one of the trade-offs is that we're spending more money on brick and mortar now in doing this. So now we're going to have to get creative with how we raise money and what we do with patronage and how we get people involved in between. So we're talking about how we can involve different shows in between the shows that are big shows of the year. Our four major shows, you know, we'll have every couple of months. A new show. But in between that, are we going to do a reading? Are we going to do a little concert, a mini concert from some local musicians? Are we going to have some fine art on display. And I think the answer is all of those things and more. So that's pretty exciting.
As you said, we've always been nomadic, and it's definitely a new adventure for us. And who knows what it means for the future? We've never had a year-long rental before. And we may like it, we may hate it, but just like Matt said, I mean, just because we've opened this new door, it does present an entirely new set of challenges and adventures, and it's exciting, and I can't wait. It's really exciting for Gaslight, and we just have to take it one year at a time to see how it goes.
And I mean, on the other side of that, the flip side of that, the other hand is that we have a place to, like, store our stuff in between shows. We don't have to, like, go, whose house is this going to? Who's taking all the costumes this time? Who's got a basement that's open, you know, and... We have the ability to kind of keep things around and not have to break everything down so quickly. What can we still use? How can we reformulate? So I think we'll still be pretty economical there, but just to kind of keep it in line is a little better.
David, you are involved in many theater projects around the region. What do you see looking at Gaslight as they move now into a new space?
Well, it is a whole lot of fun to be asked to work with them because it's an entirely different thing. And it's a farm-to-table model, for the most part.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Farm-to-theater.
They can produce whatever they want. I went to a marvelous Shakespeare that they produced in Scranton a couple years ago, and they've done a lot of Shakespeare, a lot of classic things and modern things. But one of the great things about the Playroom series is it's homegrown authors, homegrown tech, homegrown actors in a little space right here at home. Mm-hmm. And that's very exciting. It's a thing that is very difficult to do if you're a big theater where there are certain expectations that have to be met, not only financially, but perhaps by your audience has come to expect a certain kind of thing. So the fun thing about working with them for the first time is there really are very few expectations of Gaslight other than, of course, high quality. People don't know what they're going to do. And I think there's an audience that kind of likes that.
Yeah, I thanks for saying that. That's really wonderful because of the four shows that we're doing this year, three of them are completely new. People have never seen them before. We've got Playroom here in the summer. Then we're going in October. We're taking Toast up to Fringe, and then we're doing a weekend of it in the new space.
Paul Bearers comes next
in January. Paul Bearers is written by B. Garrett Rogan, who's one of our playwrights for Playroom. David here wrote Toast, or compiled Toast, and kind of edited it and curated it himself. And Playroom, this year it's eight authors from the region, so it's terrific.
Playroom is a delightful concept, and it's yours, Matt.
Yeah, about 5 years ago we started with our first Playroom, and I said that I wanted to do a room in a house and then commission some other authors to write a play that takes place in that, their own play. So we get seven or eight completely different universes, completely different plays, but we don't have to move the set around so much. Usually when you go to see an evening of one-act plays, it's like, how do we make it minimalist? How do we move from world to world? And this, I think, kind of changes that paradigm. So we've built up over the years. We started with the kitchen. Then we went to the bathroom, then the attic, then the master bedroom, and this year we're in the garage. So it's myself and seven other authors, Okla Elliott, who's a professor at Misericordia University. Okla is a great poet and playwright in his own regard and novelist. If there's something to write, Okla is one to write it. So I asked him to be a part of it. He's a good new friend of mine. Jennifer Hill, Laurie M. Myers, Emily Halbing, who's a student of mine, formerly from Misericordia. Now she's moved on to greater things. She lives in Pittsburgh, but she's still from the area. Rachel Leon Strayer, B. Garrett Rogan, myself, and Lucas Tomasacci. So eight totally different worlds this year, and it's great. It's going to be probably a good two-hour hit with an intermission. If you don't like one play, you just wait 10 minutes, another one comes along, you've got a whole new world to enjoy.
It's an eight-car garage.
What do you love about Playroom?
My favorite thing about Playroom is the kind of mystery where the writing process starts that I imagine. You come up with the little description of what the space is, what the garage is, what the attic is, and we give that to the playwrights, and they come up with these different universes, like Matt has said. And even though you have different themes, you have some lighthearted ones, some really deep, dark ones, some that go back and forth, it's interesting that when we get to certain rooms, we sometimes see a through line between some of the themes in the plays. And it's amazing that these authors have no idea what the other one is writing, and maybe where they're going with it by the time it's finally written and by the time it's finally staged. But then at the end, you kind of have not a complete theme together, but they weave their own like little tapestry together. And I think that's so fascinating. And it's kind of a little bit of a mystery, because how can that happen just with, you know, a little idea in someone's head based off of a three-sentence description?
Yeah, I think that's kind of what's iconic about the series in and of itself. Like you said, it weaves a tapestry. And even though you may have people who touch on the same element of that room, it shows a certain universality, something about that room that we all kind of connect to. And, you know, audiences pick up on those things more than you would expect, and things that I didn't even think about. In previous years, they've come up and said, oh, you think that this person and this person live next to me? Like, sure. Yeah, why not? Of course. If they do for you, that's good enough for me. You know, if you saw that connection, by all means, pursue it. And it's great to have so many playwrights bring so many different visions and different ideas of what that room means.
Well, there's that marvelous serendipity sometimes to randomness.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The Dadaists play The Exquisite Corpse, where they would pick the words out of the cup. And Zara or somebody said, when you pick the words out, you glue them down together, you will have made your poem. And I always love this quote, and it will be beautiful and resemble you.
Yeah.
And so here we have three sentences leading to eight visions, mm-hmm. but there's something about it that taps into a sensibility mm-hmm. about that mm-hmm. place or what happens in that place. Mm-hmm. And somehow the evening can be beautiful and resemble us. You know, we find what yeah. people see in it quite randomly, you know, without anyone colluding, and
no
still
colluding.
It works.
Yeah, no colluding. That's right. Yeah. And even though we have several directors working on it, David's working on two of the plays. I've got two. Brandy's got one. David Reynolds has one. And Jason Alfano, our incoming artistic director at Gaslight, he's got two. You know, there's something about, even in the audition process, I think that's probably the closest we come to colluding. We sit together and we go, oh, I want to see this person read this. Or we'll just hear, so it doesn't need to be our own slides or our own monologues or our own pieces. We can observe from afar and watch other people ask things of these actors who have come in. And we were very fortunate. We had so many people turn out to these auditions. And it's great because it's a low investment for them too, as actors, as talent, to come in. And they have 10 or 15 minutes of lines to memorize. And yet they still get to be the star of that universe. They still get to take something and make something new out of it. And it's exciting for them, too, to have something that has never been performed before. You know, they're putting their stamp on the first time this is performed. And they really get to kind of carry that author's message along. And it's really exciting for the playwrights to be able to experience that, too. Everybody involved in the process, from playwright all the way to the audience and everywhere in between, there's some new personal connection with it. So I love that part about it.
Yeah, and in every sense of the word, Playroom is an ensemble piece. You couldn't have a better example of it. And that's another one of the favorite parts of it. Just like Matt said, in casting, it's this giant puzzle, because we are essentially doing a repertory double weekend of eight yeah. different plays and eight different performances with up to 20 different actors. And there's so many moving parts to it. And the way it comes together is almost, I want to say flawlessly, but I'm gonna knock on wood, yeah. on wood for that.
It
but
works out, that though. Yeah.
Every single year, the people that come out to auditions, we always get such a big draw for Playroom. And I think there's just such a great sense of pride in the work that they do, that they can have their stamp on this. And it's an incredible thing to be a part of on the production end, but also I think the audience can see that a little bit when they come to see the shows.
Yeah,
it's really neat. It's neat that when it's all done, when we have everything figured out, and we even hit our tech runs, it's like mm-hmm. things are firing. You could tell that things are finally happening with these pieces, and it's just thrilling. As a playwright, I can say it's thrilling to see your piece come to life like that in that week. But as a director, too, it's so special to see suddenly now you're breathing life into this thing that never existed before. You know, there's something special to that.
Keep your playwright hat on. You, in the past, have made a decision from year to year, perhaps, to hang on to these intriguing characters. Have you done that this time?
I have, yeah. This is the fifth year for this family, who still doesn't have a last name. I don't know that they need one. I haven't written a play since the first iteration of Playroom in the kitchen. I haven't written one for the daughter. She was in the first year, and she hasn't come back again. So this year, I'm bringing the daughter, Marla, back, and she's got a garage band, without saying too much. And, you know, obviously, garage bands are loud, and parents usually don't like them. So that's where I'll leave it. But I absolutely do continue their story. And I try to create a play that maybe adds to winks and nods at those people who have seen the others and seen everything else that this family has gone through, but also kind of is its own world. It's a self-contained little piece. You don't have to have seen previous playrooms to enjoy this one, I hope. And that creates an interesting challenge. Every time, whenever we sit down to do like a read-through of these plays, we read through them all and for notes for the playwrights. But my question to everybody is, does this work on its own? Does it live in its own universe? And does it also somehow add to the whole family? And this year, I think it has, so that's good.
Brandy, what are you directing?
I am directing Lucas Tomasacci's piece, which is Tabula in Aeternum.
Yes.
Lucas has been involved just about every single year, if not every year. And this year, we actually have our first monologue. He wrote, it's about a full page, maybe two pages, double-spaced, great monologue with an elderly man in early retirement, kind of looking in on himself a little bit and what he's done with his life and this relationship he has with the table that he's refurbishing. So it's a great little piece, and I think it's a nice introduction into Playroom to have a monologue. It fits perfectly with the structure that we've been doing, and I think it's a nice little break from the other one acts, and it gives one great actor 10 minutes in the spotlight.
Yeah, it's a cool, it's a really nice way to pace the evening, too. It was kind of a surprise that he submitted that this year, and absolutely a joy to work with him, as always. He's working with us from afar, but, you know, this is still his home area, so I love having him involved.
Yeah, and a monologue is interesting, too, because it's easy enough for the actor, him or herself, to work on. And it almost seems like there's a little less than to do. It's not as involved as a one act, but there's still a lot to, you know, sink your teeth into and to work on staging with an actor. So I think that'll be interesting to direct another person just doing a monologue.
David, what plays are you doing, and did you select them?
Well, I'm the rookie, so I got the short straw.
He did.
No, I voluntarily took the short straw because I wanted it to be random. And I didn't want to know what I was going to get. I thought that's almost better that way. But I've got, and it's important how we pronounce this, not Velvet Underground, but Velvet Underground.
Yeah.
By Laurie Myers. Changes everything. So a spoiler alert there. And It's Enough by Rachel Strayer, who I believe wrote Drowning Ophelia.
Yeah, she did Drowning Ophelia, which we got to put on this past January in Scranton, which was, that was four sold out shows on that piece. It was a very limited sort of seating, but that's, I think that might be a Gaslight record, actually, to have four sold out shows like that. So she's been with us from the very beginning, too. She's been writing plays for Playroom since the very first installation of it, and she's a great, great collaborator.
It's wonderful what I found in my two when I read them. The first moment I thought, I'm not sure I can do this. When you think of what would be in a garage, it's almost like being on Family Feud, garage and, right? Mm-hmm. But we have garage band, right? Mm-hmm. But a good friend of mine, who's about 10 years older, I would visit his house, and in his garage was every toy his daughters had ever had.
Oh, wow.
And his daughters had moved out. You know, they had graduated from high school and college, and I thought, why are you keeping all these toys? I am beginning to develop such a garage. I have a few of those things myself. And I'm at that stage in life where I can relate to that. But in the two that I'm directing, and also others, there's a theme of loss where people come back to that garage and find things they've left behind. Because one of the first things we see when there's clutter is, well, put it in the garage.
Yeah.
And we'll decide what to do with it later. So the garage becomes a repository for memories. So we have a woman revisiting her young self and wondering how she went wrong. We have a play with a brother who's gone missing. I mean, the most unimaginably horrible of situations, a family member who can't be found. And we have a couple facing a tragic loss in their family and trying to deal with it at a garage sale. So once again, on Family Feud, we have garage band, we have garage sale. Who would know
these themes would come up
out of garage? But they're very, very touching pieces and very difficult to stage.
Yeah.
And I think the audience will be moved by them in 10 or 15 minutes.
And we saw that with Attic, just like you said, a repository for memories. But the Attic seemed to have more of like a dusty feel to it, like you had to blow off the dust to kind of get to that memory. And the garage seems more of like an active, a recent memory or that more action takes place there. I don't know how. I think
you're onto something there. I think it's a place where people work on things. It is storage, both temporary and sometimes long term, but it is sort of this place where things sleep, and there's oil and there's chips of wood and there's, you know, different ephemera around, and it's not, you know, it's a little more amorphous than that. And, you know, garage sale, I mean, it's a place of transition. Each one of these places has had their own special themes, but I'm finding that the garage ones certainly touch on these in a totally different and special way.
Speak to us a little bit about what you're directing.
Yeah, so I'm directing Jenny Hill's play, and it's entitled Czar of the Bazaar. And I think it might be a play that opens our evening. It's something of a sort of sideshow, circus-y feeling. Jenny Hill is a great poet and writer. She's been hula hooping a lot in the last few years. And so she brings a certain sort of whimsy of that carnival life and that movement to it. And it's a very colorful piece that I think will be a great representative of the act of theater, too. It's asking the audience to literally engage their imagination. And so that's going to be a great way to kind of kick off the evening. The other play that I will be directing is going to be my own. I haven't directed my own yet in this series history. So I wanted to kind of take this and you know, I'm stepping back as artistic director of Gaslight. My term is ending, so I'm kind of taking that sort of back. I want to do some more writing in my own time, but I think I also want to maybe get on stage a little bit again. I haven't done that in a while. So this will be my opportunity to kind of do a little send-off with one of my plays and then get back into some of those other things I've been meaning to get around to. So those are the two that I'll be directing.
And David, you've been at this table to talk about some of the classics. You've just done Shakespeare's Hamlet, you've just done The Crucible, and now you're doing Ink is Wet pieces. What did you look for when you were going through these scripts?
You look for character. What in there do I understand? What in there do I know? Who is living on these pages? And how will I bring them to life? What situations in my own life can I relate to there, or people that I know or things that I've seen? And when you have a playwright who gives you the raw material to work with that truly has pathos, the characters that are very, very real, you certainly look forward to bringing them alive. And even at the readings, I mean, we had 15, 20 people at times sitting doing readings at the auditions. And I had read them. I knew what I thought I was looking for. And then I would see a pair of actors and actresses go up and perform them again and say, "Ooh, look what they saw there." And so that is one of the most joyous things about going from print on stage, is seeing them come alive. And in this case, the treasure is for the first time. And in directing the actors, what do I see that they might not, that I can offer to them?
And you have such a short amount of time, particularly with Playroom. And as a director, I always fear with doing something like Playroom that you just don't have enough time and you don't want to force it or have it contrived. But every year, the playwrights give you such good fodder to work with, and it is almost, I don't want to say effortless, because there are things to mine in there that you can work with the actors, and you can get a different perspective from other directors or even someone that's just sitting in and watching. They could give you a little nugget of information. But that's what's, again, it's so great about the short form theater, from the audition process, through the rehearsal process, through the production process, all together, really.
Yeah.
Dave Reynolds has been so instrumental in creating the spaces in which these plays have taken place. And he's up again.
Yeah, he's been Gaslight's resident sort of tech director since he got the degree. You know, and every time he says he's got that master's, I go, "That's right, get to work." He's wonderful. And the fascinating bit about doing Garage this year is that we don't have a curtain to open. You know, we have a garage door to open. And without tipping our hand too much, that's kind of one of the special little goals now, to build a garage inside a space. We even toyed with the idea of, like, if we were to get a space, would we want to do this as an environmental piece? Do we want a garage itself that people have to sit outside on? But we considered weather and things like that. And we wanted the show to be able to go on no matter what. So we're building a garage inside the space, and we're really trying to bring it to life. And if there's anybody who can do it, he can. He's really been dedicated to the idea. And this project itself, this whole series, has really also been a way to showcase set design, which, if you're doing your, I guess they say if you're doing your job, right, people don't really notice the set, but I think they should notice the set, right? Like, they should look at the set and go, like, "Oh, wow, look at that. How could they bring this environment in here?" Some shows you go very minimalist and you go ultra minimalist and you only have a chair and a few things. And I think that that's great depending on what's on show. But for this series, it's about the room. It's about the space. And David really gives out 120%. And a lot of us pitch in, too. You know, that's the thing about Gaslight. Everyone from the board on down to the actors goes and pitches in and brings something and swings a hammer and makes the space new.
Yeah, what's great about Playroom, especially with the set design, is it is almost endless possibilities of dressing the set with props and decorations, because I have found us 15 minutes before we open the first one, like, "Oh, here's this dog dish that we can put on the floor."
Yeah, and it works.
And we can just keep going. And especially with an attic and a garage, you can just fill it with so much clutter that means something to me, means something to David or Matt or yourself. And it's so fun in that way to just keep going and imagining it fully.
Remind us then how we can see Playroom in your new Playroom.
The dates and times are July 14th through the 16th and the 21st through the 23rd at 8 p.m. and July 17th and the 24th at 2 p.m. The location is 200 East End Center in Wilkes-Barre Township, right in the plaza there. And we'll have signs on the windows and a big poster for Playroom. And our website is gaslight-theater.org.
Matt Hinton, writer, actor, director, Gaslight's artistic director, and the one who conceived the idea for Playroom, Gaslight's Brandy George, directing one of the pieces, and David Parmalee of the Little Theatre of Wilkes-Barre, working with Gaslight for the first time, directing two of the one acts. That's Playroom, The Garage, and it's July 14th through the 17th, and the 21st through the 24th. As Matt said, there are 8 p.m. shows, the 14th, 15th, and 16th, and 21st, 22nd, and 23rd, and Sunday matinees, the 17th and 24th, at 2, at the new home of Gaslight Theatre, 200 East End Centre in Wilkes-Barre. And it's The Garage, the Playroom series, Gaslight Theatre presenting the series at 200 East End Centre in Wilkes-Barre, Wilkes-Barre Township, July 14th, 15th, and 16th at 8, the 21st, 22nd, 23rd at 8, and then Sunday matinees, the 17th and 24th at 2. There will be a website you can check, and that's gaslight-theater.org, and theater is T-H-E-A-T-R-E, gaslight-theater.org. Thank you.